יהיו לרצון עם רפי בגיון לבי לפניך, אדוני צורי וגואלי. May the words of my mouth and thoughts of my heart be acceptable before you, O God, my rock and my redeemer. Shalom all and welcome, Erev Tov, buenas noches, bienvenidos everybody, to our ongoing classes in the Torah of the Kabbalah from our Master, the Rabbi Yosef Haim, the Ben Ish Hai of Baghdad. I am, of course, your host, Ariel Bart Sadok of the Kosher Torah School. You find me online at koshertorah.com. We are learning in the 19th chapter of our book. And the good thing that we are having consecutive lessons in this is that I hope I don't have to go back and review or actually introduce a whole bunch of material that we've done in our previous classes. I'm going to encourage you to please go back over the previous lessons for the foundational material that I have introduced so that we can stay focused and move forward. So, unfortunately, there is no standardized text with pages. There are two different versions of Dat Tfuna available today. The most recent one by my friend Yoshua Salam. And I have one which was published back in 2001, which is, in my opinion, even better. It's by Siach Israel. And they have, of course, you have the Salam version. Those are the two that are available today. I believe the original Hebrew text is available online. So all I can tell you is that I'm in the 19th chapter, and those of you who have Hebrew want to follow along, please feel free to do so. V'ata, avo leva'er drushim lo shuro'am rishonim, v'hem sodot nifla'im. And now, I've come to explain lessons that were not taught by the earlier generations, and they are wondrous secrets. This material, Rabbi Yosef Haim, our author, is taking this as quote from Rabbi Chaim Vital in his Sha'arei Kedusha. We've discussed this material in that series as well. What we're about to read now is a number of questions. We're going to introduce the questions and then seek to answer them. And if you sit back and I'll translate the questions to you, think about them. See if you can figure out the answers for yourself. And here they go. And why is Rabbi Chaim, being quoted here by the Ben Ish Hai, why is he even bothering to explain or expose all of this material, all of these secrets? He says it's for the purpose of explaining the techniques of prophecy. He says, if I didn't have to do that, I would not be doing this. All right? He says, "V'echtavam betachlita kitzur," and I'm only going to write this very briefly. All right? So, "Eshal kama she'elot amukot." Now let's ask some very deep questions. The first, "Matzor echaya bebriyat ha'odam bo'olam hazeh baguf ubanefesh." Question one, what was the purpose, or what is the need of creating man in this world in both body and soul? Why is that structure necessary? Question two. Lama hosiv od biyitzirat ha'adam shnei yitzirot acherot v'me yitzir hara v'hayitzir hatov shebo. Question two. You got a body and soul. Why do we add now to the formation of man what we call the two inclinations, the two yetzers, which are the good inclination and the evil inclination? Who needs them? Question three. Achar sheshneim shekulim bo, now that the two of them are within us, ech natna b'china latoto l'zeh u'l'zeh, b'ezi b'china im yeshichol latito, alken lo yivru klal. So now that you have within us the possibility to go to one side or the other, right? Is there really the ability, right? Why do we need this? Not only why was it created, why do we need it? What benefit? What good is it? Question four. Biur l'shnei yitzrim elu ma'aninim. Let's explain. It's not really a question. It's actually a statement. What the two yetzers are. All right. Just as a side note here. Good inclination, bad inclination. Are these inclinations natural to our humanity? And we say yes. Now that's a very interesting statement. Because if you think of natural, right, you think of what comes naturally. Morals. Isn't good and evil all about morals? Are morals natural? Isn't that a good question? If we look to everything in nature, are there morals in nature? Is there any other intelligent or less a species that we know of that has a code of morality, innate, natural, or otherwise? Interesting questions, no? Then, where is our human code of morality? Where and how do we find what is natural and unnatural? Let's get very sharp to the point. We are now in the summer of the year 2015. We're all very familiar of the recent decision in the United States Supreme Court, which claimed that same-sex marriages is a protected constitutional right. We'll leave politics and even halakha aside and address the issue. We all know that the Torah prohibits male homosexual practice. Right? Can't deny what it says. You can interpret it and think about it whatever you want, but it's there. Is it natural? Well, is it the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination? Now, of course, people are going to make all kinds of claims based upon their political and social and philosophical beliefs. But let's put beliefs aside. Let's get back to nature. What is natural? That's what we have to understand. The fifth question. Ledat im nishmat ha'adam gedolah min ha'melachim o lo? Is the soul of man greater than that of the angels or not? And if we truly want to say that man is greater than the angels, how come angels don't need to come down into this world, into this physical world, and to, you know, incarnate in body and soul? And if you want to say that the angel is greater than the person, if shar, we can't accept that. Why? Because in all of the teachings of the sages, we find that the opposite is taught. As it is said, who is greater, the guardian or the one who he guards, etc. and so on. Velo od ki ha'ketuvim atzmam morim lehefech. It says we also have to see what the quotes here, a number of different pasukim from the Torah, give strength to God. Israel is called God's glory. We're called the children of the Lord our God. Israel, in who God is glorified. And the angels don't say the prayers above until Israel begins their prayers below. You have all kinds of different statements. We don't find any statements about this made about the angels. Only about Israel, people, human beings. Sixth question. Kigam im node shekenu tema gadola likrotam banim. And if we have to admit that it's pretty intense, pretty profound that human beings should be called the children of, you know, God. Lomar shemetishim koach elyon. And yet, we find that we have the power to weaken the upper powers, or to strengthen them, or to give glory to up. How is it that we below have an influence for good and bad on the powers above. He says, contemplation of these things can make a person become a heretic. Now, let's just explain real quick. It is very clear in the teachings of the Arizal that not only can we give strength to heaven and support heaven, we can weaken heaven as well. That's true. Our deeds, our emotions, our thoughts can make heaven strong or make heaven weak. Now, in order to understand this, we have to take this and extract it from mythology and fantasy and make believe and look at it actually within the realms of psychology, like this is meant to be. First of all, let's stop thinking about heaven as some kind of magical kingdom on the end of the rainbow over there, you know, somewhere between Asgard and all the other places up there. Now, let's get realistic here. As we've been teaching in our previous lessons, okay? If you remember in our previous lesson, we spoke about the inner worlds and the outer worlds. We're talking about the tikkun of the inner worlds, the rectification of the inner worlds, and that's the realm of psychology, the realm of the mind. So therefore, when we want to discuss about strengthening or weakening heaven, we are talking about strengthening and weakening the connections to what we can call higher levels or streams of consciousness that are influenced by us. Higher streams of consciousness are what we call the higher worlds or heaven. We can open up those streams of consciousness or we can close them down. It's all a matter of what goes on in the mind and what we say goes on in the heart. Now, heart, again, is not the organ in the chest. It's the realm of thought, feelings, deeds. We can expand consciousness and bring light. That's why it's called enlightenment. Or we can seal them closed. In my opinion, our present societal endeavor is to seal light, close it off. People are no longer being taught how to think. They're being taught what to think. So they repeat things like, automatons, rather than have the ability to think rationally and analytically. We discussed this in our Sefer Yetzirah series about the value of the Sefirot, which we call Bina and Chokhmah, wisdom and intellect, intuition and irrational thinking, how they are necessary for one another. If you remember in our previous class, we spoke about one is cloaked within the other. One is overlapped by the other. So therefore, the way that we strengthen the connections to heaven is, of course, opening up our minds to a proper balance and alignment of the Sefirot. And it is these types of things that, indeed, the entire Torah of the Ari is all about. And it is only by transforming ourselves as individuals do we have the potential to transform the world. Now, let's give some practical examples. Those whose streams of consciousness are opened receive from higher sources within themselves that which we can call creative revelation. And who can be such a creative revelator? In other words, who brings to us brilliant ideas? Well, you can think of the great minds of the world. You can think of people like Lao Tzu. You can think of Plato. You can think of all the great philosophers and all their brilliant and wondrous ideas that have truly brought light to the world. I'm not going to mention prophets because their wisdom did not come from themselves, it came from others. But the sages of Israel certainly are in that choir. But now, let's shift. How about musicians, likes of Bach, Mozart, Beethoven? They too channeled light. How about scientists, the likes of an Einstein, a Tesla, even a Bell, even a Pasteur, or any of these other people who again used their intellect, their Bina, and somehow somewhere the Chokhmah inside them connected and brought things to light? Now we talk about, this is rectification of the Chitzoniut Ha'olamot, the rectification of the outer worlds. Well, I'll tell you this, as great and wise as the rabbinic sages are, and the Greek philosophers, and the Chinese, you know, wisdom masters, or the Vedic teachers, they're all great. And I certainly enjoy and appreciate Bach, Beethoven, Mozart. All right, I have the highest esteem for the like of Alexander Graham Bell and Einstein and Tesla. But I'll tell you this, on a nice hot summer day, the one who I can appreciate most is the guy who invented air conditioning. How's that for rectification of the external worlds? You can get as philosophical all you want and say, life is meant to be hot, go and enjoy the heat. But I'll say, okay, you go out, it's 95 degrees out. You want to go out and enjoy the heat? Go for it. As for me, I'm going to go and sit in the air conditioning. All right, that's rectification of the outer world. But the idea to invent air conditioning or a refrigerator or whatever, this is part and parcel of our spiritual inheritance. And we should not, must not ever separate it and look at it distinctly or differently. This is a point that we covered in our series of Duties of the Heart, where in which our Rabbi Bahaya there clearly stated that it was the study of the sciences that's also part of the rectification of things. So that is why I will always encourage you, rather than sit down and read books of philosophy that will give you great ideas, how about read books on science? Go read books on biology, chemistry, physics. Become a creator. Become an inventor. Take something from out of your mind and make it real in hand. That is how we contribute to what we call Tikkun Olam. But this is how we can strengthen or weaken heaven. And unfortunately today, things might not necessarily be going in the right direction. But that's another topic for another time. Seventh question. Inyan ha-nevuah. Let's discuss the matter of prophecy. Ech yitachen shidaber melech, malchei ha-melachim, ve'afilu al yedei malach, el ha-adam ha-shefel. How is it possible that the absolute creator of all, calls here the king who's the king of the kings, would speak to human beings, even if through the hand of a messenger, an angel, right? Where on earth do we come across that we are so important, that we are worthy of such a communique? This is a very interesting question. Think about it like this. In our religious mythology, when all we can see is the smallest glimpse of light, and the only reality that we know is God and us, we extrapolate from that minuscule point and think that that is the ultimate reality, that the universe is only us and God. God created us, it's us and God, and that's it. But yet, as our minds expand, as we explore in Revelation, we recognize that our universe is far greater and far grander than we've ever known. This is causing significant and serious emotional destabilization in many of the religious who are desperate to cling to the mythologies of the smallness I just described. They can't handle this. But what's going to happen? Think about this. If and when we actually make contact with an extraterrestrial civilization. And no, they're not going to be the little greys who are coming down here to take over the world. And they're not going to be the octopuses who are here coming down here to suck out our brains. And they're not going to be the weirdo aliens coming down here to steal our water, or the women, or this. You know, forget all this science fiction fantasy. We might find civilizations out there. And we will cultivate with them diplomatic relations. And as we do, what will we discover? What will we learn about the greater nature of the universe? What will it say to us? Will it invalidate our Torah? I don't see why. I don't see why at all. On the contrary, first thing I would get, once I got to know the aliens, I'd want to know what Torah they had. Because we have ours, I'm sure they had theirs. And we will begin to see the greater picture of things. And we will meet one civilization. And then we'll meet 1,000, maybe 10,000. And just like the small little tribe living on a hill somewhere eventually got to know the other tribes and eventually created a community, a kingdom, which then became a country, which then became part of the greater whole wide world, so we will expand out into the universe, and we will learn more, see more, experience more. And then we have to look back and say, well, we were still this little insignificant, little point of light. The creator of this all still spoke to us. I think we're going to find that the creator of all speaks to all his creations, wherever they are. But we still have to ask the question, why? What's the message? Well, this is what prophecy is all about. And that is a very, very important point, because it shows us the direction of our species evolution. In other words, when we talk about having a natural moral compass, we're talking about our relationship to other species, which we already know biblically exist. They are called the messengers, malachim. In English, angels. Now, we are all very familiar with the mythological portrayal of angels here in Western civilization. You can go into any one of the Hallmark type stores in your local shopping malls, and you'll see these little ceramic statuettes, usually of little blonde-haired, blue-eyed white girls with wings on the back, and those are angels. Yeah, right. Wink, wink. We can go into the biblical description of angels, and they are certainly far more radical, far more frightening, certainly alien by every description. Four faces, multiple feet, and all the rest. Now, I'm not here to describe the anatomy of all of these different species, but I will postulate an interesting question. Let's just say, from our limited mythological point of view, which again I emphasize is a myth and not true, where in which people say God created all those angels just for us. Oh, really? And how come they have such involved and technical anatomy? If you read about a chaya or a seraph having a specific anatomy, you can rest assured that its anatomical foundations has as much significance to its species as ours does to us. It's not just there for the heck of it. And therefore, it should open our eyes to the greater sophistication of these other races. We can argue whether they're extraterrestrial, interdimensional, whatever. That's not our point here. But we must understand that they do exist according to our teachings. And they interact with us according to our teachings. And the nature and purpose of these interactions is what we're here to discuss. Why are they making contact? That's the question. That's the question from biblical times to today. Our text continues.
We've already discussed in the previous section with the topic of the nature of the worlds.
That
the entire existence, we said, is summed up in one single name of Havaya.
Go reference the previous lessons.
And everything is included within it. V'nehalekit l'hamisha olamot. And we say that it is subdivided into the five. He uses the word olamot.
We're not going to translate it as worlds. Let's translate it as levels or dimensional planes.
V'hen nikra'in.
Oh, we have new words to introduce here. What are the five realms? They are referred to, and he's going to mention here the five names of soul. Yichida, Chaya, Neshama, Ruach, and Nefesh. Those are the order from above below. We refer to them together from below to above as the Naran Chai. These are what we call the energy, the soul. We've referred in our previous lessons to the worlds and to the Sefirot and the Partsufim. But what enlivens them? What is the source of each and every one of these realms? That is what we call its soul. What's a soul? Now, let's not try to anatomically define a soul. Is it ball lightning, of energy? No, let's not go there, because I'm sure the five levels of soul, you're going to have five different anatomies to try to analyze. But what is a soul? Well, if we say that God's the creator of the soul, we extrapolate from one onto the other, and we come to a profound revelation. Consciousness. The concept, the idea, the parameter of a sentient life force. This is what we call a soul. And there are different levels of soul. There are levels of soul as life force, sentient consciousness imbues, emanates in the different forms of life. What level of consciousness does one have in a human body? What level of consciousness does one have in an animal body? What level of consciousness does one have in a plant? What level of consciousness does one have in a rock? Now, if you remember from our previous lesson, we said that all things have consciousness. All things are technically alive. Maimonides, he gets even radical, quoting from Greek sources, but embraced by Kabbalah, where in which he says that the planets and the stars themselves are alive. And not only are they alive, he says they are conscious and self-aware, that they are aware of themselves and aware of God. Extrapolate. He just said what we refer to in popular words as Gaia, or Mother Nature. The planet Earth is alive. The planet Earth is a sentient living being. But isn't the planet Earth a domem? Isn't it an inanimate object? Yeah, but it has a soul. It has consciousness. And the water, and the air, and the energy. Those are what we call the arma, the fire, the air, the water, and earth of the living earth, our planet. Everything has life. Everything has a level of soul. Let's continue.
Ha'olam ha'chomeri hazeh, this physical world of ours, right, this form, chomer means form, hu guf v'chomer l'kulan.
This world of ours is the body and the form of all. Now remember, when we're talking about this world, we're not just talking about planet Earth.
We're talking about all physical reality. This world, therefore, will include Mars and Venus and Jupiter and the Sun and the Pleiades and Orion and Andromeda and wherever else we go in this dimensional plane. Everything is the body and form of everything higher within it. Ba'ofan, in this matter, ki kol ha'olamot hem tzrut adam kolel mechomer b'tzura. All of the different dimensional planes, olamot, they are in the form of man, not physical, and it is made up of form, chomer, and tzura, image or force. Force and form. Inner reality, outer reality, lower reality, higher reality, physical reality, spiritual reality. The idea and the ideal. This is a foundation principle of all that we hold in spirituality. You will find this is the common denominator of spiritual teachings in pretty much every global spiritual system around the world. Inner and outer, physical and spiritual. And I might add, the only system that denies this is the atheist system, which denies the existence of what we call the spiritual domain. Now, as strong as atheistic tendencies might desire to be in Western civilization, if you ever look at the numbers, they're actually a very, very small, even though powerful and outspoken, minority. The vast majority of people around the world of all different religions and walks of life acknowledge the basic foundation, inner and outer, physical and spiritual. Now, extrapolate from this. He says here that all of these are subdivided into these five different levels of ruchaniut, spirit, or if we would call energy and life. Wouldn't it be interesting that in the days, years, weeks, whatever, to come, when we actually make contact with E.T., and I don't care if, again, if it's our little gray guy in a flying saucer, I don't care if it's the blonde-haired, blue-eyed babes from the Pleiades, whoever it is, the first thing that I would like to know about them isn't what they eat for lunch. It isn't what their science and technology is. It's not even what their political or social system is. I would be very interested to know about their religion. Now, interesting thing. You think that this is not a significant topic? In certain circles, it is. If you ever go into UFO research and the claims that there are actual extraterrestrial contacts with our secret government. You know something? I don't doubt any of that. You know, if I was in government, I certainly would keep it a secret. I've read literature that allegedly claims, or I should say allegedly claims it, whether that's alleged or not, who knows, that they do make contact with the aliens, and the aliens have a message for us. So what are the aliens coming all across the galaxy want to tell us? They want to reveal to us the secrets of technology? No. They want to challenge us who has better pizza? No. Apparently, the majority of alien contact literature, according to those who claim that this stuff exists, I can't validate or deny if it does or not, I can just tell you it's in the books. The aliens are talking to us about religion. They got a lot to talk about religion. What are they? Evangelists? Missionaries? The one thing, you think about it, right? We understand human beings, right? Who's going to be the first people to go to Mars? The missionaries? Oh, can you imagine this? Can you imagine the confusion? Our astronauts go and we finally make contact with whoever is out there. Let's send a Lubavitcher and a Mormon and a Baptist and a Catholic. All right. Oh, you got to throw in at least one from ISIS. Right. And let everybody go out there and start yelling and screaming at the aliens how they have to convert to their religion. You ever want to see the aliens get together and say, let's blow up this stupid planet? That wouldn't be the best way to make first contact, would they? Maybe they have the same problem. Think about it. Isn't that interesting? All right. I'm not going to get into the Neanderthals and the Anunnaki and the humanoids and the reptilians, whatever. But I want you to understand the nature of our humanity and recognize that it is not unique to us. The point that he's saying here is that this exists universally. And if we have these levels of dimensional developments, we call levels of soul and consciousness, so is this pattern to be found everywhere. And that is what I would want to see. How another from a completely different background would perceive it. And what levels of revelation and insight they could provide. Or for that matter, what we might be able to provide for them. Interesting. And God, who is the author of all, had planned this all from the beginning. And we are just in the continuing, never-ending story of evolution. Continuing. Ve'adata. Kishem avaya b'melu'a ba'alfin ole b'gematria adam. We know, we covered this in our basic Kabbalah series, that when you take the name of Yud, Kei, Vav, Kei, and spell out each of the individual letters with filling it with the letter Aleph, you get the numerical value of 45, which in Hebrew is Mem, He, and that's why it's called the name Ma, and that's the numerical value of the word Adam. He's saying that to introduce. Val derech ze bekol prat uprat bekol bechinoteha kol bechina mehem nikra adam prati. In each and every way, in each and every detail, according to this, everything therefore is called man. All right, specifically a subjective level of man. Why? Because it includes the name of God. Subdivided into the four foundations and the ten sefirot. You see, when we say that everything is made in the image of man, don't think Homo sapien. The image of man is this Yud-Ke Vav-Ke spelled out as Ma. In essence, what that means is that there is a level of consciousness wherein which everything in creation can perceive a reflection of the divine. Now remember, the one thing that we will have as a common denominator with absolutely everything in this physical dimension, no matter what planet we go, no matter who we meet, we will always come up against one thing. We call that Tzah. Like we've discussed in many of our other classes, at this level in our physical universe, the mind is only able to comprehend a certain level of the divine. And that is what we call God's revealed name, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, which as we know means being in action. There is the great question that I always hear skeptics and scoffers ask. Well, if God is there, where did God come from? I happen to know the answer, believe it or not. God came from God. Huh? I don't get it. Of course you don't. Neither do I. There are certain things that are above and beyond our ability to understand right now. And even if we do travel to the stars, and we take the USS Enterprise, or we go to Babylon 5, or wherever else, in whatever fantasy or real universe, and if we meet the Jedi, or the Sith, or whatever else, you will see, you will know, you will understand that God can be perceived and understood only to a limit. Again, I have a comment here in text, which is I'm mentioning because somebody makes a mention here, because I heard this actually from a local friend of mine this week. Where does God come from? Somebody says, oh, we know exactly. It says in Habakkuk 3:3 that God came from Teman. And I chuckle when people tell me that, because they don't really understand the prophet Habakkuk, and they certainly don't know what Teman is. Teman is the Hebrew word for the country of Yemen. And the reference is something very well known in the original Hebrew. When Habakkuk wrote a poem about the Spirit of God moving upon the earth to come to Mount Sinai, it said how he traveled from one place to the next before he came to Mount Sinai. So I think that people really need, when they start to read things in the Bible, you got to remember English is just the translation. You got to go back into the original language. You got to research it and recognize what it meant in its original context, or people will come to misunderstand things, unfortunately, as they always do. The only reason why I'm mentioning this is because our dear student here in class is mentioning the same thing that, again, a neighbor of mine mentioned to me just earlier this week. I found that interestingly coincidental. So anyway, you have to be able to read and understand the Bible properly. I mean, that's what Kosher Torah is here to do. We're not here to interpret. We're just here to tell you what it says. Moving right along. The general pattern of things. God in the world. God in all of creation. So, we might meet a civilization a million years more advanced than we are. Maybe they are acting as the agents, representatives, watchers, or messengers of God. In other words, angels. Their knowledge might be greater than ours at present. But their knowledge, like our knowledge, today or a million years from today, will always be limited by the context of our universal parameters, or we call the Olama Asiya. You have to go beyond into different higher dimensional planes to have higher different dimensional revelations. And we can only go so far within a context. And that ultimately, and only that, can we ever go beyond. Reb Chaim continues. Od yesh chiluk aher. He says there's another division here. V'lo nitpe'er b'shar ha'kodem, that we didn't discuss earlier. V'hu, and this is, ki gam es ha'svirot. The 10 sefirot nehalaku letaryag bechinot. They are subdivided also into 613 different aspects. Kamo shit ba'er, as I will explain. What he is describing now, or referencing, I should say, is a teaching that we taught from our series in the Etz Chaim, Gate 50, wherein which we speak about the 613 commandments of the Torah. And we say how they correspond to the 613 parts of the astral body, energy flowing a movement, and how our actions and behaviors activate and energize our astral body. Now, this is a foundational principle you'll find in pretty much any system that is built on energetics, like the Qigong system and the Chinese and the like. Our behaviors influence our energies for good, for bad, or if you will, weak or strong. Again, getting back to the concept of natural. Are the behaviors that we perform good for our qi, or do they weaken qi? Are they good for our energy, or are they bad for our energy? That's the question. If you ever want to define natural, it is not going to be defined by philosophy. It's not going to be defined by an edict of the Supreme Court. It's going to be defined by nature. And nature will show it within the context of natural flow and applications of energy. I will give you a very clear example. If you were to take an axe and chop your head off, I am going to predict that that is not going to be contributing to the strengthening of your chi. That's just my prediction. What do I know, right? Death takes chi and dissipates it. So then what energizes chi and strengthens it? You can go into Chinese literature and discuss that. You can go into certain Vedic literature, right? In the Ayurveda system, we'll talk about energy. What is energy that strengthens? Natural, yetzirah tov. What weakens energy? Unnatural, yetzirah ra. We say that the mitzvot of the Torah are the Jewish Torah way of expressing and explaining these things. So that when a Jewish individual is observant of the Torah, they are strengthening the chi that is natural and flowing within them. Now, wait a second. If that's natural, shouldn't then a commandment being performed by a Jew and strengthens a Jew's chi, wouldn't that equally strengthen the chi of somebody who's Chinese or Japanese or something else? No. No? How come? Because of subjective application. The 613 commandments, as applied to Israel, is the religion of Judaism. But being that they are energetic in origin, and the number 613 is really just a symbolic metaphor, we discussed this in detail in the Atzheim class, then those other cultures and societies, they each have their own applications, their own, in quote, subjective interpretations or applications of their own 613, by a different name, by a different number, by a different form, and each which strengthens or weakens. And that is how we have to understand the truth of things. Now let's move on. V'hari ki kol ha'olamot yahad, all the worlds together, v'ken kol prat mehem, and each and every detail within them, mipnei atzmo, within each and everything, nivra b'dumut adam ha'tachton, as we say, is created in this form of man. Remember, we described man. The Zehu Sod, and he goes, this is the secret of the verse that we know so well from Genesis. Na'ase Adam b'tzalmenu kidimutenu. We will make man according to our image in our form. And he says, Hevin Zehetev. The secret of why the creation of man is in plural isn't because there are multiple gods that are getting together in council, sitting around the boardroom saying, okay, let's create man. It's the different elements and aspect within God, the 10 sefirot, which are, again, elements of personality, consciousness. This is a very philosophical way of saying God's wisdom, God's understanding, God's heart, and God's soul spoke together and said, let us create man. Is God's wisdom, God's understanding, God's heart, and God's soul, are they different independent beings and persons? Actually, that is the way it became understood within Catholicism, and that was the development of the Nicene and Apostolic creeds and the foundation of the Christian concept of the Trinity. And in Judaism, we've long taught that that was a misunderstanding. But, of course, there are those who disagree, and they want to fight and, you know, act very violently against Jews, telling them these things, but what are you going to do? But anyway, that explains what that's all about. V'kvar nitba'er, ki min ha-bri'ah ulmata. As we've explained before, from the realm and domain of bri'ah, which is the realm of thought and mind, and below, ha-kol nikra etz hadat kolel tov v'ra. Everything from the realm of mind and below, mind, emotion, and form, all of this is what the Bible refers to as the tree of knowledge, good and evil. What is above the realm of Biriyah? The realm of Atzilut. The realm of Atzilut, we said, that's the realm of the divine. That's tapped into from the unconscious, from the intuitive, and the like. And when we disconnect from that, then we are in the realm of good and evil. Gee whiz, I wonder where we've been for the last 5,700 plus years. And when we connect to the upper higher world, that's called the tree of life. And that's why it's called
Etz Chaim L'Mahazakim Ba. It's a tree of life to those who bond to it. So, in every spiritual religious tradition, to the best of my knowledge, globally throughout time, there's always been the concept of the higher and lower, the physical and the spiritual. And in most, there's always been the direction to move towards the spiritual, be more spiritual people and the like, etc. and so on, making us better human beings. That's the constant to tell us to choose good. But what happens when there is a denial of the existence of good and evil? The denial, the existence of soul, the denial of the existence of spirituality. Then pretty much anything goes. And in the denial of an energetic reality, that doesn't make the energetic reality go away, but it certainly can lead to the blindness of complete imbalance of the energetic realities, leading to what we can learn from the laws of physics, an equal and opposite reaction. Now think about this. If you knew that you were creating imbalance and that that imbalance was going to come back and harm you, you would, if you were a rational individual, claim, okay, it is time to repair the imbalance. That makes sense. Most people will know if they have problems with addictions, overweight, and etc. We know these things are imbalance. Got to fix them. We want to maintain equilibrium. What happens if you deny the state of imbalance? Oh, there's nothing wrong. Yeah, so I smoke, so I overeat. Nothing wrong. It's not unhealthy. There's no imbalance. Well, does your denial make these things go away? No. Just means that you succumb and you die. So then, if we block the vision, the consciousness, the level of soul we don't see, nature will take its course. Nature always takes its course. Our job is to become sensitive to and aware of nature so we can become in tuned with nature and to live naturally. And that's why the tree of knowledge, symbolically, it's only a symbolic tree, has both good and evil. We choose. And that, I'm going to jump ahead in the text and reveal the secret. That's why we're here on earth, to help us choose, so that we make the right decisions. One of the laws of Torah is Baharta Bahaim, choose life. We can only be given that moral requisite because its opposite also exists. We can choose death. So right now, if you're lighting up a cigarette, right now, if you are overweight or doing other unhealthy activity, you're choosing death. You're choosing the tree of knowledge to the side of evil. Don't ask me. Don't challenge me. Go to your doctor. Ask your doctor. Go to your energy individual and say, how's my energy in my body? How's my chi? And they'll say, well, it'd be a heck of a lot better if you lost X amount of pounds or if you stopped smoking or stopped drinking or stopped taking drugs or whatever, which are imbalancing us. And those are only at the physical level. We could speak about all the emotional problems and all the mental problems and everything else as we go through the different perspectives of dimensional reality. But let's move on. We'll finish up this one section here. Shebekol madriga mehem, at each and every level, from Biriah and below. Biriah, the realm of mind, to Yetzirah, the realm of heart or emotion, Asiya, the realm of form. In each and every one of these, the lower that you go, the lesser the amount of good, and the greater amount of evil. Ad shetim sashi olam shefel, until you get down to this physical world, robo ra miato tov,
the minority of which is good, but the vast majority of which is bad. Think about this. How many ways can we be unhealthy and unnatural? Oh my, I don't think we could write a book with all of them. How many ways can we be healthy and natural? Well, it's pretty much a common denominator for all of us. So you see, the good path is always called the straight and narrow path, while the bad paths are always referred to as wide and expansive. There are a lot of ways that we can mess up, but there are very, very, very few ways we can do things right. Think about it. You know it's true. Moving on. The Gam Nitba'er will also explain Ki Le'olam Harasha Maktir Et HaTzadik. Very interesting concept here. He says that the evil person is always on top of, like a crown, on the righteous. That's curious. Why is that? V'lachen etov nikra pri, v'hara nikra klipa. Good is always referred to as the fruit, and bad is always referred to as the peel that cloaks the fruit. Interesting relationship. How the lower level comes before the higher level. How the immature comes before the mature. How the sick comes before the health. How the weak comes before the strong. Isn't this what we know of life? But of course, sometimes we can leave things and they can degenerate. And therefore, we have to make efforts to get them healthy. But sometimes you can actually intervene for bad. So we have to understand the nature of what we call pri la klipa, fruit to its husk or shell. Matter of fact, the word generally used in Kabbalah to describe evil is the klipa, the husk or shell. Velo zo bilvad, not only this, ela ki afilu ha'orot ha'tovim, even the good lights themselves, hem al derech zeh, they are like this, ki ha'yoter zach v'ruchani shebehem, even the levels of lights. Lights are levels of what we call consciousness, enlightenment, revelation. Higher levels are cloaked within lower levels. What does that mean? That you have to get to the lower level first before you get to the higher level. You get to a certain level of revelation, and when you finally grasp it, then boom, you get into a deeper level. And then when you finally grasp that, you can get into a deeper level, etc. and so on. It's called light concealed within light. V'ken kulam kifi seda madrigotehem. This is the way it is according to the order of their design. V'kvar nitba'er v'shar shekedem. And what we discussed in the previous gate, where the previous discussion, ech ha'ein sof panimi mekulam, that the ultimate light of unknowable God, called the Ein Sof, is the source concealed within everything. And external to that is the realm of the sefirot according to their levels, with the keter being the most internal and the malchut being the most external. And Bezrat Hashem, now that we've described our questions, began to define our answers, Bezrat Hashem in our next class will pick up and go further. Somebody is asking a question in text, is using medicine to overpower nature tov ra? No. Medicine, physical medicine, is a blessing because it helps in many ways restore balance to things. Now, we all know some medicines cannot and do not do that. Some medicines have terrible side effects. Have you ever listened to some of these pharmaceutical drugs that they advertise on television? They put on these pictures of these people loving, laughing, having a great time. This drug, take it, it's going to cure this and that. Then you listen to all the caveat of all the different things. Oh, by the way, if you take this drug, which is supposedly going to solve your tummy ache, it might give you a stroke. It might give you a heart attack. It might cause you brain damage. It might kill you. And you go, oh my God, are people even listening to this stuff? That's not what I would call balance at all. There are good pharmaceuticals, there are vital pharmaceuticals, there are necessary pharmaceuticals. And that is something you have to discuss individually with a medical your medical personal doctor. But just to take drugs for the sake of drugs, that is a dangerous chemical cocktail which can kill you. So you be careful. Natural remedies, Herbal remedies are, in my opinion, always the best. But sometimes we get so out of balance that the natural remedies aren't strong enough to kick us back. So the secret is to maintain balance from the start. All right. Let's conclude on this note, and Be'ezrat Hashem will pick up in our next class. See you all then. Thanks again all for joining me. I'm your host, Ariel Bar Tzedok. Come see me online at the Kosher Torah School at koshertorah.com. God bless. Good night. Shalom.